Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the live broadcast of Capital Markets Today. CMT is where experts come to discuss capital markets, trading, real estate, and lending-related topics. You may participate in online discussions by joining the Capital Markets Today group on LinkedIn and on Twitter. To obtain more information on CMT's guests and their companies, go to capital-mt.com and click on the past show contact info link. Podcasts of this show and past shows are also available on the web at capital-mt.com. Now, your host of Capital Markets Today, Luis Amaya.
Welcome to the live broadcast of Capital Markets Today. My name is Luis Amaya, host of CMT, and today is Thursday, January 31st. We've made several improvements to our website at capital-mt.com. We are offering free housing, mortgage, and default data on the web. The data is interactive and allows the user to export as well. In addition, our listen-on-demand feature is also improved, and as usual, we encourage you to take full advantage of CMT's functionality on the web. And we also always welcome recommendations or suggestions. We invite you to tune in to upcoming broadcasts on February 5th, 10 a.m., Manit Ujja, CNBC hedge fund specialist, Squawk Box producer, and Forbes 30 Under 30 designee will discuss her book, The Alpha Masters. And on February 14th, 10 a.m., Skip Shanker, founder of Ready for Remodel, will discuss how 203K renovation financing can increase investor returns when liquidating assets. We are fortunate to have as our guest today Brian Fox, senior advisor at HUD, who is running the next single-family loan sale offering in March. As part of the offering, Brian will also be managing the Neighborhood Stabilizing Outcome Pools, also known as the NSO Pools. This discussion with HUD and Brian is the first of its kind on CMT, and we are excited to have this opportunity. We'll be right back to drill down into the upcoming offerings with Brian in just a moment. Brian, thanks for participating in the show, and welcome.
Thank you, Lewis. Happy to be here.
So we'll jump right into this. Before we get into discussing the upcoming offerings, wondering if you can shed some light on how HUD came about to selling assets, the benefits that you obtain at HUD, as well as the benefits that the borrowers get in these types of transactions.
I'd be happy to. So first and foremost, HUD has had a note sale program for about the last 12 years. I believe the original note sale was around 2000, and that form ran from 2000 to 2005. The early sales were large deals, generally about 5,000 notes per sale, and they were structured transactions, so joint venture arrangements between HUD and the purchasing entity. In 2005, we stopped that structure just given the market conditions. Home prices were rapidly appreciating. Our foreclosure flow and inventory was down, so we really didn't have a need for an alternative disposition strategy at that time. In 2010, when foreclosure inventories were starting to spike again, this is kind of, you know, in the aftermath or, you know, post-peak of the housing crisis when, foreclosures were at record levels, we knew that we needed an alternative avenue for disposing of assets rather than everything going through our foreclosure channel. So the note sale program started back up early in 2010. It was a different structure. These were outright cash sales, competitive auctions. They were sealed bid, and they went to the highest bidder. And from 2010 up until the early part of 2012, we sold about 2,100 notes. Generally speaking, they were done on a quarterly basis. The sales were about 200 or so to about 800 notes per sale. and it was generally considered, a pilot program just to kind of test the market appetite for those type of assets in that climate. Also in 2012, there was an initiative that came out that was part of a joint agency task force, which we called the REO to Rental Initiative. So we sent out a request for information. It was spearheaded by Department of the Treasury, FHFA, which is Federal Housing Finance Agency, and then the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. And the purpose of this RFI, or request for information, was to really seek creative ideas or solutions on how to deal with this glut of unsold REO inventory that was just hitting the markets in these especially hard-hit areas with real no end in sight. And the thing with these types of areas is that, let's just use some examples. Let's use Detroit, let's use Chicago, parts of New Jersey, Florida, Phoenix. There's, I know I'm not even going to get close to naming them all, but there were a number of areas throughout the country where even if you had completely cleared out the entire inventory of REO, there was 10 times that in backlog or shadow inventory waiting to come to the market. And in these areas, so many people had lost their homes to foreclosure that even if they wanted to become buyers again, there's inventory out there to buy, and even if they wanted to become buyers again, they couldn't because they're precluded from getting a mortgage after going through foreclosure for a number of years. So we knew we didn't have the purchase demand, and so we knew we needed to come up with an alternative strategy, and so that whole REO to Rental initiative came about. And so basically the idea of the REO to Rental was to sell foreclosures or foreclosed homes, REO properties, in bulk to investors who were then required to hold those properties for rental for a term of 3 years at least. So that was a way, we knew that an owner-occupied property, with a cash-flowing mortgage or an on-time mortgage is the most neighborhood stabilizing. We know that a vacant, blighted property that is sitting on the market for, sometimes multiple years is the most destabilizing to the neighborhood. And then, a rental or, a short-term occupancy is somewhere in the middle, definitely more on the spectrum of, neighborhood stabilizing. Not quite owner-occupancy stabilizing, but, we know that definitely would have positive effects on the market. So, Fannie, Freddie, HUD, the entities that really had product to deliver into this program, set out to design that vehicle. And, it was about a 6 month or so process. And really, Fannie Mae ended up leading the way. So the work product came out, and Fannie put out a term sheet for its first bulk REO deal. Well, at that time, FHA saw its REO inventory go from about 100,000 down to 30,000. At that time, we were kind of in the middle of the AG settlement. Foreclosure transitions were, almost at a halt because nobody wanted to foreclose on anything until they knew what was going to happen, with the whole settlement. So we saw the REO inventory drop, and as we looked at doing bulk sales of REO across the country, it really didn't make sense. We didn't have the supply. And so at the same time, given the slowing in transition speeds through foreclosure, our inventory of seriously delinquent loans was at the highest all time. So, we kind of circled up internally and we decided that we should focus our efforts on our backlog of seriously delinquent loans rather than focus on REO. And we really didn't think that we were going to abandon by any means the goal of the REO to Rental, which was to stem or control the supply of REO properties hitting the markets. We felt confident that we could do that going upstream and doing that on the non-performing loan side rather than waiting for it to go into REO. So, at that point, we basically created an expanded version of our note sales program, which is called the Distressed Asset Stabilization Program. And we really did two main things at the outset. One, first and foremost, is we greatly expanded it. We expanded the number of notes that we were going to put through that program, which was kind of the first and foremost thing that we need to do. This is a problem that needs to be tackled in scale. A couple hundred notes here and there isn't going to do the trick, isn't going to really make a dent in the problem. The other big thing that we did as part of the enhancements was we created another pooling type. The pooling type, as you mentioned, was called the Neighborhood Stabilizing Outcome Pools. And those pools are very similar to what Fannie did with the REO to Rental. They were pools of notes, seriously delinquent notes, in geographically concentrated areas that the purchaser of those pools would have to undertake certain post-sale restrictions. So those post-sale restrictions were that no more than 50% of the properties could be foreclosed and sold as REO. So that's where we get back to the whole stemming the supply of REO sales hitting the markets in these areas. So, you know, what were we looking for with those outcomes? Really, first and foremost, we want these new purchasers to get creative with their mortgage modifications. You know, the best case scenario for the borrower, the best case scenario for the community, the best case scenario for the investor, and really, you know, all around is if they can get that, you know, if they can employ creative mortgage modifications, offer deep relief, and get these loans to reperform, that is, you know, going to have profound effects on the communities, and that's just the best case all around. Now, we know that's not always going to be the case. Some people have been unemployed for some time, and they just can't afford their mortgage. So other things, you know, such as, you know, short sales or, you know, other alternative strategies that are, you know, less damaging to the community, less damaging to that borrower, you know, are also part of the program. At the end of the day, you know, the home might be vacant. The borrower just wants nothing to do with it. So the new purchaser does have the ultimate ability to foreclose and hold that property for rental for 3 years. So that's kind of the last line of defense when we talk about neighborhood stabilizing outcomes.
Just to interrupt you for 1 second, on the last trade, it seems like there was quite a bit. So the NSO pools are regionalized and specific to certain areas. Did you find that there was more demand for that particular types of pool, or was there more demand for the nationwide pool in the last trade?
So that's a great point, and it really everything is at the pool level. And so if you look at the geographies that we sold NSO pools in September, we had Phoenix, we had Tampa, we had Newark, New Jersey, and we had Chicago, Illinois. You know, one of the things that we said we were going to do at the outset is we were going to test the NSO idea under a range of economic conditions. So, you know, everybody knows that Phoenix is the hot market right now. Many consider it, you know, kind of overbought, or if you haven't been there, don't bother, because, you know, that market is too hot right now. So we knew we were going to get great execution there. We knew there was demand for these types of assets. You know, not so much as Phoenix, but, you know, more so, you know, than like Newark and Chicago. Tampa was also a pretty well sought after market. So we knew those two were going to be strong. Even though Florida is a judicial state, Tampa is a market that is pretty well sought after for these types of assets. You know, we really didn't know what was going to happen in Chicago and Newark, given that, you know, both judicial states, our Newark pool was, you know, on average 4 years delinquent. So, you know, as we look at the demand for these pools relative to the national pool, overall, we did get a higher price of value. So a percentage of BPO, the price was higher on the NSO pools than it was on the national pools. Now, on the national pools, the percent of UPB was higher than it was on the NSO pools. And that's strictly because if you look at the time of delinquency, if you look at what's happened in home prices in Chicago, Newark, and Tampa, you know, over the past 4 years, you know, those are, you know, very hard hit areas. So, you know, I will say it depends, you know, what your investing strategy is. There are a lot of funds that went out there and raised money for the REO to rental with the idea that bulk sales would come through. The bulk sales really didn't come through as they were expecting. So these late stage notes, these series of delinquent notes that are in foreclosure, you know, are really, you know, seen as the next best alternative to these investors to get scale. So it really depends, you know, what that investor's approach was and where we're talking about as far as the pools.
When you put a deal out and you're doing your internal valuation, you're I'm assuming running BPO's valuations. Do you take into consideration the market within a particular area? So in other words, do you run market BPOs or do you run distressed BPOs, or do you take a look at what properties are listed for if for some reason they're up for sale, or do you just strictly run the BPOs and kind of determine your reserve pricing?
So we have BPOs that provide a number of different valuations. So we kind of have the quick sale BPO, we have the 60 to 90 days BPO, we have, you know, the kind of the distressed BPO. So we do offer investors that, you know, do get into the data room, a number of different valuations as you know, part of our data tape or part of our due diligence files. You know, everybody or most everybody is going to pull their own BPO with a provider that they're comfortable with. You know, we use a nationally recognized BPO provider, you know, generally speaking. So, you know, we put all that out there, but it's really up to the investor, you know, what they want to do as far as gathering their own valuation information is on top of that.
Well, one of the things that I'm seeing that's really new in this particular market is that the entrance into the as a buyer and investor, nonprofits or state and regional governments. Are you seeing, when you take a look at the bidders across the board, are you seeing more partnerships with nonprofits and state and local governments in these transactions?
Absolutely. And this is one of the most encouraging phenomena that we've seen as part of this sale. You know, 2 years ago, you know, whether these private investors were using community groups, whether they were using state funds, there are a lot of markets out there that they would never touch. Now, you know, they're not all of them are getting directly involved, but they are partnering with, you know, local nonprofit organizations, community groups, you know, state and local governments who have that kind of grassroots, ground-level involvement in these communities. They know what the best outcomes are going to be. They know really kind of how to navigate the codes and kind of the uniqueness of those geographies. So we are seeing, in my opinion, kind of an unprecedented level of that public-private or private nonprofit partnership to really go in and invest in these communities that are hard hit. And I really think that's really what it's going to take to really revitalize and really get these areas that just can't seem to get out from under the crisis kind of a new life. So I'm glad you brought up that point. We had several pools that were teed up, you know, kind of in size and in geography that are ripe for community groups in the September sale. So we sold three pools to nonprofit community organizations, one of which was a pool in Chicago, and they were actually partnering with the state, and they used state hardest hit funds. So, you know, I think that's a great example of this kind of, you know, government and, you know, nonprofit partnership. And so far for the March sale, we're seeing those relationships form again, and those people will be coming back to bid.
And as far as partnerships with NGOs and hardest hit fund states and that sort of thing, do you favor those types of investors when it comes to, I mean, if there's, or is it purely price based on when you transact a deal, or are you taking into consideration who the investors are and what they plan and what their strategies are?
So the authority that we sell these assets under is a competitive sale authority. So when you look at, or when we look at qualification statements, you will certainly get credit for involvement with state and local governments, being either yourself a nonprofit entity or, you know, involving or working with nonprofit entities. That will certainly help you get qualified. But once you're through the gate, so to speak, your dollar bill is just as good as everybody else's dollar bill. You know, what I will say is that There's generally a little bit of a different approach that community groups take. They definitely seem to be a little bit longer term minded with these assets. So the bids that they put in, you know, generally reflect that. I particularly think that there's private folks out there that are, you know, just as capable and will do just as good of a job as anybody, you know, whether they be, you know, a nonprofit or a local government. But at the end of the day, you know, we generally see a different approach to, you know, working with borrowers, to offering mortgage modifications, you know, from the community groups than we would see, you know, from a larger private entity.
So how does an investor, what's the process for an investor to be an approved bidder?
So right now we're currently taking applications for the March sale on the NSO side. So on the Neighborhood Stabilizing Outcome pools, we have our qualification statement out there on the web. For that, basically it is a three-part document. And it's a four-part document. One is really just a legal certification and just, you know, to make sure that you, you know, are allowed to invest in mortgages and you haven't been debarred or anything like that. The other three parts are really focused on your default servicing, your asset management, and your property management, all around single-family assets, that are in, you know, delinquency or in distress, you know, we're specifically looking for your experience and your track record getting positive outcomes or positive resolutions with these type of assets. This is one of those things where we don't leave a whole lot for chance. You know, the neighborhoods are you know, very tough. It takes a very unique skill set to be able to be successful in these areas. So you really have to show us that you have a proven track record on the default servicing side and on the asset and property management side. So to do that, you can go to our asset sales office website. And, Lewis, I think that we should, you know, if it's not already, we should put the link up there on your website so that people can access that. But it's, you know, www.hud.gov, and then you can find the asset sales office website. But the qualification statement's up there, the confidentiality agreement's up there. You know, basically you submit your completed application, and it generally takes us, you know, a week or 2 weeks, depending on how solid the application is, and then you'll be approved for bidding. On the national pool side, it's a different qualification. It's a little bit more streamlined, and those will be up, I believe, early next week. And those will be in the same place. They'll be right next to each other.
Do the investors have to show proof of funds or put a deposit in place?
So at the qualification level, it is on the NSO side, we do require audited financials. On the national side, it's a self-certification. However, for you to put a bid in, you have to post 10% of your bid amount. So you do have a down payment that you will lose if you are subsequently unable to close the transaction.
So can you talk about the stratifications of the pools that are coming out? I mean, do you have that data yet?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the next offering is going to be in March. We are, you know, currently looking at about $3 billion in total offering, which is it's certainly not small. So we're excited, but you know, there's a lot of work to do, and we haven't officially carved out the pools yet. But you know, what we're looking for on the national side, you know, there's going to be about $2 billion of assets on the national side, about, you know, I would say 12,000 to 14,000 assets. And the pools will range from, I would say, 50 to 75 million in UPB to upwards of 200, 300, 400 million in UPB. So there will definitely be a range there. You know, what we want to do is we want to kind of test appetite and executions under different pool sizes. We obviously know not everybody can write a $200 million check, so that is something that we're cognizant of. But, you know, again, this is only the second iteration of this expanded pilot, and so we're still committed to testing new things, figuring out where the best executions are. You know, at the end of the day, we have a fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers, and so we need to make sure that the pooling strategy, the sale terms, the process and the structure – yield the best returns to the taxpayer. So, you know, as we continue to put out more sales, we will continue to refine, test, refine, and likewise. Did you want me to talk about the pooling on the NSO side?
Yes, please.
So, as part of the March sale, the NSO side will have five different geographies. We're going to have Southern California, which is going to be kind of like an LA, Long Beach, Riverside, San Bernardino. We're going to have two pools in Florida. One's going to be a Greater Orlando pool. One's going to be a Southeastern Florida pool. So I'm sorry, let me back up to California. That pool is going to be our smallest NSO pool. That's going to be about 290 to 300 notes. The two Florida pools are going to be right around 1,000 notes. So they're going to be our biggest of the NSO pools. The other two are going to be in Atlanta, which is going to be about 800 notes. And then the final one is going to be in northeastern Ohio, and that's going to be right around 800 as well.
And so how many individual deals do you anticipate? On the NSO pools, are they going to be sold to one investor for one particular region, or are you going to split those up kind of like you are the national within that region?
So what we did last time is, you know, let's take Chicago for an example. So the overall pool in Chicago was about $270 million in UPB, and we knew that there was a community group interested in purchasing you know, a smaller pool. We knew there were other entities that were interested in Chicago but couldn't afford that type of check size. So what we did is we worked with the state to identify a subset of the larger geography to do a carve-out pool. You know, we are very interested in getting that range of investors, you know, the small regional guys to the big guys to the nonprofits to the government agencies. So, you know, if somebody were to come to us and say, look, I'm really interested in this geography, but, you know, this pool size isn't feasible for me, and you know, it looked like, you know, something that we could do, we would carve out subpools. So we did that in Chicago, we did that in Tampa, and we did that in Newark as part of the September sale. You know, right now we haven't really seen that interest. You know, the NSO pools are a little bit smaller this time around than they were in September. So I'm not sure if we are going to carve out, but I would certainly be interested in entertaining those ideas if somebody were to approach us.
We are about down to 5 minutes. So one of the questions I had, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, is do you think Fannie and Freddie are going to be close on your heels and selling off their balance sheet?
Well, that is something that I cannot speak to. What I will do is just kind of, you know, reiterate what's general market rumors that, you know, Fannie and Freddie, you know, they are entertaining the idea. As part of the strategic plan that FHFA put out in 2012, they were going to explore the idea of selling off whole loan assets. So where they actually, you know, come out, or if they do a sale, that's something that FHFA is going to have to communicate, and the GSEs will be responsible for that. You know, HUD is going to be a programmatic seller. You know, we're committed to doing this every quarter. You know, in our budget in 2013, we said we were going to do about 40,000 assets. We are a little bit behind schedule. That's part of the reason that we ramped up to $3 billion as part of the March sale. But the tentative schedule for the rest of 2013 is another sale in June, another sale in September, and then most likely another sale in December. So from here on out, the idea for us is to become a programmatic seller in size, a very consistent product that's transparent and, you know, what we think is a very investor-friendly program. And we want to do it on a regular basis. We think it makes sense, you know, not only for HUD and our insurance fund, but, you know, we're seeing great outcomes to borrowers. And so all around, we think it's a win-win.
So in the last two or three years, it seemed to be a lot of money raised and not as many trades as anticipated. But it's almost seeming like it's going to start. I mean, if, for example, Fannie and Freddie start selling and you're selling and the banks are starting to loosen up, is there enough money raised to take down, you know, last year was $6 billion, roughly a $6 billion market? I mean, it could easily this year be $15, $20, $25 billion.
Yeah, no, I think that that is a great question, and that's something that we're certainly cognizant of. If we start to see lower executions in our June sale, then maybe we throttle back, we sell less, or we pool differently, or we do something to make it a more desirable product. But, you know, what we know today is that the market's hot. There's a lot of money raised for these type of assets. It truly is a seller's market. And how deep this market is, I really don't know. You'll get different opinions from different people that you talk to. But, you know, I think it's deep enough for, you know, another $3 billion in June and perhaps another $3 billion in September, and then I think we reevaluate at the end of our fiscal year. Certainly if Fannie and Freddie get on board in size, you know, the banks are, you know, the Wellses and the Cities, there are other programmatic sellers out there. If they continue, you know, eventually, you know, something's got to give, right? There's got to be a kind of a return to normal here. So, you know, really I think that time will tell with that one.
If you were an NSO approved bidder in your last offering, do they have to reapply?
So they have a streamlined application process. They are able to basically certify that there have been no material changes, that the skill sets and the personnel that they applied for our September sale have not changed, and that they have the same assets under management and the same financial capacity. So they do get a streamlined approval. And, you know, that's something that we hope that will, you know, encourage a lot of repeat customers.
And lastly, a couple of two things to just wrap up here. One, do you have any, can you give us any pricing color expectations that, you would expect? And I know it's going to vary across from regions, so that's, I know it's a pretty hard question. And then just, you know, What are your forecasts for the market? And this is another crazy question. What are your forecasts for the market in 2013 as far as just the overall mortgage and real estate industry?
So as far as pricing for our deals, we were right around 40 on the national pools, and we're just over 40. And this, I'm talking cents on the dollar, not UPB on this one. So we're right around that 40 handle for both the national and the NSOs. On BPO, on average, we were mid-50s. Now, that certainly varies by pool and by region. From what I hear, you know, comparing where things were trading then and things are trading now, you know, we are definitely expecting a little bit of a premium or a little bit of juice in execution. How big that is, I'm not sure. As far as, and by the way, the full results from the September sale are published also on the HUD website. So I encourage everybody who's interested in the sale to go and check that out just to get a sense of where pricing has been in the past. So we have the results all the way back to the first sale in 2010. As far as the overall market, are you talking in terms of trades, or are you talking something more general?
Trades. I mean, I think the increase in trades facilitates the beginning of the normalization of the whole industry as we work through this pipeline. And so I just wanted to get your feedback on, you know, how long before we're normalized, and what do you think the markets, or do you foresee any clogs this year like we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, so I think we're seeing an interesting dichotomy in competitive advantage right now. So you'll see people that want to get out of the MSR business on one side of the fence and people that are seemingly desperately trying to get into the MSR business. So certainly over the last 6 months, MSRs have been the real big trade. You know, we're also seeing the same thing on the whole loan side. So if you look at the top banks, you know, what they really want to do is they want to get out from behind their legacy assets. You know, between Basel III and just kind of general high-level strategy, there are reasons to start looking forward and move on from the 2005 through 2008 years. So, you know, the big banks really are looking to get out from under these assets that a lot of the specialty servicers and a lot of the funds are really looking to capitalize on. So we're seeing a flow of assets from the big banks to the smaller specialty guys, and you know that'll eventually slow down and normalize. And I think we're going to see the same thing on the MSR side. So how long does that take? I don't know. I think we'll see consistent activity throughout 2013. To be honest with you.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate you coming on the broadcast. You gave us a wealth of information, and obviously you're very knowledgeable about the industry in general, and I'd love to have you back at some point in time, make this a regular occurrence. But thank you so much for joining us, and I know you're an extremely busy guy, so it's very appreciated.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up today's show. Please connect through Capital Markets Group on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter with the tag name Louis Amaya at Cap Markets Today. Today's show and closing jazz riff is sponsored by iServe Lending. We'll talk to you next time.
Do you want to catch the wave of low mortgage rates while they last? Then you need to act fast. At iServe Residential Lending, speed matters. Whether you're looking to buy a new home, lower your existing payments, or get cash out, rely on iServe for fast closings, awesome service, and low interest rates. For a branch location near you, visit www.iservelending.com or call toll-free 1-855-5-ISERVE. That's 1-855-5-ISERVE. If you want to catch the wave, think fast. Think iServe. iServe is an equal opportunity lender, NMLS ID 2914.